Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is Evan Marks, founder and executive director of the Ecology Center in San Juan Capistrano, California. In addition to the Ecology Center, Evan is also a permaculture teacher and designer with a background in agroecology. There's a little bit of everything in this episode, which I recorded in February of 2014. Evan and I talk about his beginnings and how he came to this work, the founding and operations of the Ecology Center, as well as practicing professionally, including the power of collaboration. Just as we support various functions in the landscape, so should we in our business practices and communities. Part of the Ecology Center's success stems from partnerships with individuals and organizations, as well as in the mission-driven, hands-on focus of the work that Evan and his team do. They bring together public and private groups to deliver education that is experiential and benefits everyone interested in sustainability. This is taken a step further by partnering with the local school district to offer continuing education to teachers, which in turn benefits students. You can find out more by going to theecologycenter.org, for which you'll find a link in the show notes. If you enjoy this episode, please support the podcast. Your contributions help keep things going and allow me an opportunity to engage and do more, touching more lives with this wonderful work of permaculture. Find out how to become a one-time or ongoing contributor at www.thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. Now then, on to Evan Marks. I'll join you afterwards with some thoughts and updates. Then, Evan, if you're ready, could you give us a bit of your background and biography? How you came to do what you're doing, and we'll take the conversation from there.
Scott, thanks so much for having me. This is Evan Marks from the Ecology Center. My journey into this world of ecological literacy started, believe it or not, when I was a teenager. And I would spend my weekends both surfing significantly and my weekdays, but I would also spend some of the time during the weekends helping my mom in the garden. So those two things kind of are what have shaped me, both the ocean and both getting my hands dirty. And when, as a teenager in high school with the basic criteria of community service, I started volunteering with the Surfrider Foundation. And I learned really quickly firsthand about the impacts that humans do have on the environment. And I saw, even in Southern California, and especially in Southern California, incredibly dirty beaches, beach closures following simple and major rain events, and that bothered me, and I wanted to do something about it. So as a teenager, I said, well, if no one's going to do anything about it, then who is? So why don't it be me? And I got into this environmental studies track, and I was leaving high school, and I ended up in college and started taking on some environmental issues as a student, and that led me right into the field of sustainable agriculture, because I learned earlier, as I was doing some environmental education work around the oceans, that the number one source of pollution to this great body of ocean is runoff from agriculture. And it just didn't seem right that our food not only was the number one impact to the health of our oceans, but it was also poisoning each of us. So I studied agroecology at UC Santa Cruz, and I got into this whole integrated design thing through a first permaculture course I took in 2000 in Hawaii on a summer break from my agroecology studies in Santa Cruz. And during that time in my life, I was very much engaged in a farming community. And I, you know, we farmed, our backyards. We farmed for money on the after school. We farmed during the summers. We traveled to learn more. And we were completely engaged in this exciting world that I guess that we're all still engaged in this permaculture world. Let's see. So after college, that took me into a year of apprenticeship at Camp Joy, which is this almost 40-year-old homestead now, which is kind of this exemplary model of all of these systems that we're talking about in this design science in Northern California, right outside of Santa Cruz. And got some skills there, heightened skills, grew some amazing, unique, rare food varieties, and experimented with a bunch of perennial plants, and milked a bunch of goats, and made cheese, and lived sort of that homestead life. And that was kind of, I guess, the last of, in a way, the last of my farming in North America for a little while. I left that apprenticeship and ended up farming and living in Costa Rica and Latin America for the next 4.5 years. So I was, at that point, that was, I guess, a few years into my permaculture journey, and kind of read, seemed like, every major book on the topic, and was circled around a lot of permaculturalists. We took permaculture teacher trainings that we organized in Santa Cruz, and it was definitely a passion of mine, and ended up at Punta Mona in Costa Rica with my friend Stephen Brooks, and started helping lead those permaculture courses with Penny Livingston and Brock Dolman, and ended up being kind of their number one facilitator and permaculture teacher there for a certain amount of years, and taught permaculture courses throughout Costa Rica. And those sort of segued into larger consulting projects. Kind of the bulk of my work in Latin America was around the design of really large-scale sort of sustainable ag systems. So 1,000-acre farms, multi-100-acre farms, 60-acre eco-villages, really looking at how do we restore tropical ecosystems through all of these principles, but really kind of putting it to work. That was incredibly fascinating. So that was 4.5 years. And in that stint, there was education, there, you know, me teaching, there was consulting, and then there was a lot of international development work that also followed with that. So projects in Peru and Nigeria and Ghana and quite a few other sort of aid-based design stuff around bamboo, around clean water, around agroforestry, and just kind of just taking in and exploring professionally all that I could. And, you know, the tropics were amazing. You know, still as a surfer, there was a lot of fulfilling things with it. But one of the things that I did realize on a trip, a USAID-based trip in Nigeria, was that my community probably wasn't Nigerian. I was just about to take on I was segueing out of that 1,000-acre design build project in southern part of Costa Rica, and I was about to take on a Nigeria, West Africa, which is a large-scale project, which was an 80-acre project, which was going to be an integrated permaculture system in an agroforestry-based model for the region, and it would have been the first organic certified farm and community center for the country. And so I was about to say yes on this proposal, this project, and instead I came back to Southern California, and this is where I grew up. And some of you listeners probably have some notion of what Southern California is, but most of them are probably not in this hyper-sustainable culture. But it's been an exciting journey. So I came back 6 years ago and put an idea on the table of creating a regional hub for sustainability called the Ecology Center, and gathered industry leaders in the surf and action sports industry and in the food industry and nonprofit industries and all sorts of different spaces which are central to this community. It's a metropolitan space, 3.5 million people with very little literacy around sustainability, and said, let's do it. And everyone said, okay, what does that mean? And we've been on this journey for 5 years, and it's been really fun. We're in an old historic farmhouse that's 135 years old. So there is a little bit of sort of roots and tradition here. This property has been farmed for 140 years, and we are only 2 miles from the ocean. So we're in the middle of this kind of suburbs of San Juan Capistrano, or Southern Orange County, but there's kind of the last remaining kind of stronghold, foothold of agriculture. And there's a movement happening. It feels good. There's 5 years ago, like I said, there wasn't much happening at all. And, you know, a lot of our partners in many of these industries didn't really even know what sustainability means. And it's been a really fun evolution of collaboration. And we're excited about the future. That's a lot in one little sort of run-on sentence, but I hope that helps.
My background before I came to the world that I now inhabit many, many years ago was in sociology and anthropology. So it's the stories that people have to tell that are so fascinating to me.
I'm a youngster. I'm 33 years old, but I've been deeply passionate about this movement since I was 18, and it's been a fun journey. So I'm the type of guy that gets shit done and just wants to continue to grow and learn, and so that's why it feels like it feels like a few different segments of my life, but they've all obviously connected. It's been fun.
It's funny for me that you say that, because I'm 34, and that I find that the permaculture community, if you are in your 20s or 30s, it's still kind of new for many of us when we look at how, you know, we have elders who have been involved in this community as long as we've been alive.
That's true. It's amazing. Our whole goal here, and we can talk more about this with the Ecology Center, is that we don't use the word permaculture. we just started after 5 years. So our design challenge was, how do we create accessibility to the content and to the design challenge, so that that design challenge is how do we create healthy homes? There's many different words that can describe that and many processes to get there. But again, we started in a community with very, very little ecological literacy. So let's keep the term kind of lexicon to an accessible place and get people engaged in a fun activity, and then let them kind of take a next step along the journey.
You're not the first person who I've spoken to who is removing the word from the activities.
I think there's a time and a place for it, and we did our first permaculture course here last year, and we're doing the second one here this coming up in the next 60 days. But there's a deep dive where that's necessary, but not everyone is at that level of engagement yet.
Just as a short comment, in order to engage and build what we're doing within this community, it may be best to find our niche and do that and include permaculture in it, without coming from a place of permaculture to start this work.
Yeah, just use it as a tool, not as a barrier. I think that's the key. I mean, just like everything else, there's so many tools in the box, and you use them at different times. And don't get me wrong, I love the word. And I just know that a bread baking workshop is going to be more exciting to our community than saying, you know, this is this deep permaculture experience. You know, we're all in different communities, and, you know, clearly, you know, your podcast is really connected to a core audience, and that's meaningful also.
But it's also part of the conversation. Like, I think about doing a workshop. Saying I'm going to do a permaculture workshop on mushrooms has a completely different audience and engagement than saying, well, I'm just going to do a mushroom plugging party. Come over, you know, $70 a person. We're going to plug a bunch of mushrooms. And then if I include the conversation in that. But you've mentioned so many words that I key off of when I think about education and professional permaculture. Where I'd like to go, though, is to hear more about the Ecology Center, how you founded that, who you founded it with, and your work over the last couple of years to build up this ecological literacy to the point that you could include permaculture design courses in your work.
2008, so 5 years ago, I guess I'm kind of stepping ahead. But anyways, 2008, we hosted a groundbreaking. So we invited city officials down and business leaders and nonprofit leaders and said, hey, we want to create this regional center for sustainability. And we obviously had to get the city's permission. So it was a process. The year before that was getting the kind of creating the team and the vision and the business plan, if you will, and getting our nonprofit status and finding some funders that were interested in the concept and of course, getting the buy-in from the city to open our doors. And so it's like this massive stakeholder engagement process that happens when you start working at scale, which was, I guess, somewhat new for me. Because, again, if you think about it, my core experiences were large-scale kind of land restoration, permaculture design stuff. And so this was just a wonderful new opportunity where the content was very much secondary, but the process was primary in terms of how we get to the goal that we're looking for, which is this community center. So we found, basically, we were just so fortunate. We had no real stumbling blocks in that everyone was excited about this idea of bringing sustainability to Orange County. Like I said, it's a place that's not hyper engaged, or it hasn't been in the past, and we're moving in that direction. But so there was, again, leaders of nonprofit organizations in around ocean education, business leaders in all different capacities, all sorts of kind of smart, intelligent, strategic thinkers that said, let's do this, and this is how we do it. So I had got some really good kind of mentorship, and we moved from kind of idea to opening our doors, and we found family foundations and some local corporations that also supported the idea, and that kind of gave us our initial funding. And literally we planted an oak tree as a symbol of kind of our commitment to this space. And then that turned into a native drought tolerant garden, which turned into this kind of edible landscape kind of permaculture setup, which turned into, you know, a whole slew of 5 years of activities in our facility, which is this very dynamic, interactive eco adventure we call the Eco Labs, and diving deeper into that. There's, when you come to our facility, it's again 135-year-old farmhouse, but throughout the facility, it's really the tools for building sustainability at home, but it's also the tools for thinking about sustainability culturally in our community. So it's very much a place where we engage the imagination through hands-on learning. And so it's not just the, okay, this is rainwater, gray water, and this is how you grow, you know, integrated fruit trees and this sort of stuff. But it's really like, what does it look like to create sustainability at the community level? And we're having that conversation with children, and we break things down into categories in our facility, in our contents: food, water, waste, energy, and shelter. And so we find sort of the, what's the vision for each of these spaces, and then we try to tie them all together so that by the time that you've gone through our experience here on our facility, you say, okay, cool, I get it. I get how healthy food systems create, you know, healthy people, which create healthy homes and healthy communities, and you know, you fill in that blank for healthy food systems to healthy water systems to, you know, the elimination of waste and whatever the kind of the core mission is for the categories. And that's kind of what we've done. You know, one of the things that we've done differently, and I'd like to say this as a strength, is one, we've created an inclusive hands-on program that's engaged in fun activities. So sometimes it's permaculture courses, but sometimes it's beer making workshops, and sometimes it's just teaching people how to harvest rainwater or grow organic food, or, you know, so it's not always super complex. It can be really simple and fun. The other thing that we do is design is always central to our program. And I'm not meaning that from the permaculture designer's perspective. I'm meaning that from the communication perspective. So that we work with high-end and very amazing graphic artists and design thinkers that allow us to communicate our brand in a professional mechanism. And we're very proud of that. So we create all sorts of publications, books, quarterly journals, and, you know, curriculum for school districts, different sort of web-based stuff. And I think that by engaging in that need for designing an organization and content that's around the 21st century, like kind of like, let's step up and participate and collaborate with all the best thinkers that we can, that's kind of been how we've found success.
Well, as you and I were speaking before, I've been running the podcast for a little over 3 years now and doing a lot of my permaculture work on a shoestring. As just like one person, beg, borrow, and plead with anyone I could to be able to get things done.
I know how that goes.
But my wife comes from an entrepreneurial background because both of her parents owned businesses. And earlier this year, she just looks at me. She's like, so when are you going to stop messing around? What? When are you going to focus on what it is that you want to do and work with other people to make this other stuff happen? And I just looked at her and like, huh. What I realized in my own life is to really practice professionally, I need to have a team of people around me to make it work. And somebody asked me, well, how is it that you are able to be as non-distracted as you are and fill the roles that you do to get things done? And I started thinking through it, and I have a team of like 15 different experts that I can rely on, and that doesn't count the fact that my lawyer isn't really my lawyer. The law firm that he works for is the law practice that I deal with. So it's not, you know, one person, but it's actually, there's a team of, I think, 150, depending on my needs.
Well, we talk about what it means to build community in permaculture, but we often don't talk about what it means to build a business. It takes creativity. It takes a diversity of skills. And I'm excited, actually. That's what I'm excited about. And it's harder to see the examples of permaculture beyond the landscape. And to me, it's so obvious. Business is powerful, and we're seeing it with a lot of sort of mission-driven business models today, and that's permaculture. I mean, that's all of that stuff is interconnected to, as important as the stewardship of our land, in my opinion, is the stewardship of our culture and stewardship of our economy.
And I don't know what economic model is necessarily the best way to move forward in any particular way, so I can't speak to that, but the idea is, though, that I think about is that we, and I forget who it was at the moment, but I've spoken with some past guests about this idea that because we live in a world where we need financial capital to pay bills and live in things, I don't think that permaculture can be seen as a free for everyone all the time if we're going to make a business out of it. And in order to engage business leaders and others, we need to be able to show them that this works.
Right. Again, if every element's not supporting each other and the greater benefit of the system, it's the same in building a garden. It's the same with building a business. You know, and I haven't really done those comparisons straight on, but it's God, that would be a really fun thing. That's what I'm excited about with our design courses, is we're learning to evolve them a bit so that, you know, we're not talking about how to set up your business yet, but I would love that. But we're really starting to focus on how do we give them skills in design so that, you know, whether they become professionals or not, but they, you know, people get the idea that it's not overwhelming content. It's all grounded.
I think it was Larry Santoyo who said that in permaculture, the garden is the metaphor, that it's a place that's simple to break down the systems that are there, as complex as they are. The amount of jargon that we need to know to talk about permaculture in the garden is very small. So it's a place that we can get people up to speed very quickly within a permaculture design course. But that if we're going to take permaculture beyond that design course into something bigger, there has to be models in place for folks to do that. That the education, I love the PDC for what it is, but at the same time, I wish that there was a model for a broader PDC to include those elements that we're talking about. That if you want to do a business, what are the hurdles and roadblocks that you're going to encounter? What are the ways that you can have the design practice necessary that when you hang that shingle out front and a customer goes, well, what experience do you have, that you can show them a portfolio?
Yeah, the key basic stuff that we're kind of, in a way, I think, setting students out in the world without the right tools. Not, you know, it's, of course, it takes a long time to sharpen all those tools, but just basic stuff that I do think is lacking from the traditional design course. You're right.
So what is the kind of work that you're doing at the Ecology Center to train your students up and to get them involved with all these kinds of projects?
Yeah, great question. Let's take the definition of students as broadly and not just permaculture students, or as we call them, eco-apprentices. It's really about trying to inspire and engage a new skill set is, I think, what the core of our work is. So again, our work is engaged all hands-on learning, and it's during the week, it's all school children and teacher training programs, et cetera. And in the weekend, it's all public programming, so workshops. And that all kind of goes into a couple different program categories, but we call them backyard skills. So that's the fun stuff is, you know, this weekend we did a bread baking workshop, and next weekend we'll do a fruit tree pruning workshop, and the weekend before that we did a rain barrel workshop. And so it's sort of this diversity of skills that help retrofit our communities and our homes. And then we do the same thing. So that's the public program, but again, we do that same thing with teachers. So our other body of work is called Grow Your Own, which is a school garden network, and we train up teachers. So we mentor 10 schools at the moment, so that the teachers come to our teacher trainings. We give them curriculum resources. We basically hold their hand through the first year of training and help them then facilitate organic garden and food education in their schools and let that scale. We know that we can't personally be in every school and train up every kid or in touch every kid. So it's training up the teachers with new skills, of course. So that's, I guess, kind of the core of where our work lies. There's a couple other accessories. We've got a little retail general store called Tools for Change, which is kind of like the supply space for all these skills and ways of thinking. And we do all sorts of other types of events, which are kind of high-level skills-based stuff, but some of it's, you know, food is kind of another area as a tangent, is where we've found in this community such an easy touch point around sustainability. Everyone needs to eat. So that's where these beer-making workshops, the bread-making workshop, the cheese-making workshop, and then the dinner parties, the brunches, the all sorts of fun things where we engage relationships with local farmers and local chefs to kind of present this sensory education. So those are all the sort of kind of general hubs of the spoke that our programs relate to. And fun, sensory, and multi-interdisciplinary engagements.
How many people are currently working with you at the Ecology Center?
We started with one, with me. And then there's a crew of 10 on the payroll now, and another half a dozen that are kind of independent contractors. And then those are designers and all sorts of artists and photographers and that sort of thing, instructors, educators. And then we work with dozens of volunteers and then dozens of others kind of within the community and partnerships. It's a fast-growing family, and we reach somewhere about 16,000, 17,000 people last year on site. So yeah, it's growing. It's fun. There's a movement happening, and it feels like we're right in the middle of it. It's great.
I just like to hear about the successes of others because it shows a model of what can happen. Now, when you say that there are 10 people in the payroll plus a lot of other part-time, like contractors, those 10 folks, are those all full-time?
Say 7 out of the 10 are all full-time. Yeah, so those are development and communications, marketing, school programs, public programs, sort of retail, design, that sort of stuff.
And do you mind my asking, is that what you would consider a living wage for your full-time employees?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, we are a nonprofit, so is it competitive with a high-end corporate salary? Probably not, but definitely a living wage and room for growth.
That's just awesome to hear. Thank you. Again, that going back to practicing professionally, you know, finding the ways to be able to hire other people and to create jobs and show that permaculture as a business can provide, you know, a real income for people and be a growth-oriented business.
Yeah, that's been, again, I was talking about this earlier. That's a fun part of the journey for me is that the content really became secondary. It was really about business development, and this journey over the last 6 years for me, 5.5 years, has been how do you start a nonprofit? How do you create a successful business? All that sort of stuff. That, yeah, it's invaluable. Such fun knowledge because it is, it's all scalable and it's all, you know, hopefully transferable.
I was wondering, when you're training teachers, those are coming from the public schools. Does the work that you're doing count as continuing education credits for the teachers?
It does, actually. Yeah, so we train them up in mostly in the garden programming called Grow Your Own, but we do some different modules and watershed awareness, and we have a toolkit called Good Water, a Good Water Toolkit, which is a series of booklets that we put into classrooms as well. And all of that stuff, yeah, does count for the additional learning.
What was the process in California to get your courses and things eligible for that?
You know, I think like everything else, I think there's many different ways to do it, and the way that we've done it is we've made alliances with key people in the district. So we, our key liaison is the head of science for the district, who's a close friend of the Ecology Center. So it just becomes a pretty easy dialogue because science is in a way kind of a losing endeavor in most of our public schools. So there's kind of one person in the district level that's tasked with how do we implement science, and so when you can have nonprofit partners that can help do a lot of that work, then it becomes a win-win. And I think that's key with kind of like we were saying a little bit earlier about business, is that I think all good things are collaborations.
It sounds like a lot of the success that you've had is because you took a very business-focused approach in the beginning to connect and collaborate with others. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say, and in some of the early successes specifically were about collaborative partnerships with some unique corporations that were interested in doing something good but knew that they didn't have the authenticity to do it themselves. So, for example, our first big partnership was with the surf brand Hurley, and they wanted to create a water program. They're a surf brand from water, or they stand for water, but they weren't really doing anything to support sort of the environmental efforts of what all of that meant, what their DNA is. So they started an early conversation with us, and we helped collaborate and create a program called H2O, which is their basically kind of give back arm within the corporation. So we're working on, we create content for them that's used both within our facility, but so used within their brand as well. And we work with them around sort of design, manufacturing, sustainability stuff and help push them in good directions. It's a Nike company. Hurley's owned by Nike, so they've got kind of the leaders in the manufacturing sustainability space. So it's been, you know, they're taking the cues from us on sort of directional stuff, and then they get to go back to Nike, and they now have a whole team around sustainable product that pushes their product in the right direction. So that's kind of been a really enjoyable relationship, partnership that we've been on for over 4 years now. And we've done similar stuff with Chipotle. So some larger brands that get the value of collaborations, other local brands like Sambazon and even a Kia Motors, a car company, and quite a few others. You know, again, creating collaborative content, so unique content that we create and design in-house. So that's, again, the design piece is key for us as an organization. It's been allow us to make some really nice relationships and grow them.
So one of the spokes that extends from the hub of your center is about helping to produce media.
Right, we kind of call it the Ecology Center Design Studio, so it's almost, again, less about creating landscape plans, but we do that. We do some kind of permaculture consulting type of stuff in terms of the land plane as well here, but it's more in the content center.
You have an incredible model for showing how people can engage business and sustainability and kind of bridge that gap between the two places by meeting both sides where they're at.
I appreciate that. We're definitely having a good time. We're still, I feel like we're getting closer to where we want to be, and again, having fun, and we're excited about it. That's the best part, right?
When you finally discover what it is that you love to do, that calling, rather than just a career, you can do it through the ups and downs because there's a piece of it that still satisfies you, regardless of what is happening. I've taken us in the direction of business because of your mentioning about, being very interested in growing this kind of work. What else would you like to cover during this conversation? I feel like we went in a particular direction that I, as the interviewer, wasn't necessarily prepared for. And I imagine it's because of your engagement as a communicator. You've answered the questions fairly clearly and concisely, which shortens the interview.
Let's see, what am I interested in? All this stuff that we're talking about, I'm interested in what would it look like? How do we share some of the lessons learned and empower others to professionalize or to use some of the things that we've been successful with to take into their communities? Because, at the end of the day, our organization is part of a greater movement. We're not, unfortunately, at this point directly related to, but the Ecology Center and that concept was kind of a late 60s thing where every town needs an ecology center, right? That's obvious, right? A place where we can get bioregional tips and resources and find community and kind of learn how do we live in this place. And there's probably a couple dozen of them around the country, but man, there should be kind of a couple of dozen in every state. So maybe my story and our story will share people with what are some of the pieces creating these regional hubs, and we encourage you to do that. We really hope that you do.
Well, there are certainly some conversations that I wouldn't mind having with you, perhaps as a follow-up. Once this goes out, I know that I have more questions. Perhaps we can do a Q&A at another time.
Sure.
I actually want to follow up on what you said about the regional hubs and having lots of them.
You know what's funny, Scott, is that, I guess it's obvious, and I'm grateful that we focused on kind of the business model of this stuff and the possible relationship nodes, but it's cool because it's such a different leap from where the kind of my previous 5 years was. So this 5 years was in the large scale design and land management stuff, which is, I guess, what most permaculturalists think as the pathway, and very much a viable, incredible pathway. But clearly, I think a lot of listeners are probably North Americans that are looking at how do they integrate this into their daily lives. So this conversation is meaningful, hopefully.
That's just it. In the conversation that I had with David Holmgren quite some time ago at this point, we talked about that idea that everyone within the permaculture community kind of has to have, find a couple of things that you're good at and do that. Apply permaculture to what it is that you enjoy, and then it's not all about gardens and teaching. It's about finding these models that work for you. Whether that means applying, permaculture to video game design or car repair or just, living in your home. This system of design, because of the way that it's broken down into, the ethics lead to principles, which allow us to develop strategies to create solutions, it can be applied to many, many different things in order to build a more sustainable world and a better community. And in this next wave of permaculture, from our conversation and some other folks I've talked to, is that if we're going to do those 1,000-acre broad-scale designs anywhere in the world, well, we also have to have the community engagement to make sure that once the design is done, that it's created and sustained.
Totally.
Building these kinds of models and showing people, hey, you can make a living from this, is a big part of making that possible.
It's got to be all interconnected. I heard once that made sense to me is sort of the skills that we're looking for, the traits that we're looking for. It's kind of like a jack of all and an expert of one or something like that, however the saying goes. But you got to be really good at something and then have a pretty good general sense of many other interconnected components to the system. So that's how I always kind of lead with or encourage students of mine is just get good at something, regardless. Find your passion, get good at that one thing, and then move from there.
And I wouldn't be here now speaking with you and doing this podcast if it hadn't been for discovering that at my permaculture teacher training.
Nice. That's awesome. Love it.
Yeah, we were standing around just having a conversation. I realized all these people are much better teachers than I am. All these people are much better at this and that. Where is my role? And we just started talking about, you know, setting up a website and these other things. And it's like, here's a space. And it's become this.
Beautiful. And we're thankful to you, Scott, for helping organize the community, bringing the voices to one place.
Well, and there are so many people who haven't written a book or they're not one of the people who gets invited to the big conferences, so their voices don't get heard. And there are a lot of very important stories and people out there in the community for folks to connect with. And to me, I think that's really important because then that lets people know, oh, well, so-and-so's here. Let me go connect with them. Oh, I only live a half an hour from that person.
Totally.
Bill Mollison said that we would need 1 million villages. And I think that this kind of work is what helps us get there. So thank you for being a part of this conversation and helping me understand the ways that we can build more of those communities.
Absolutely, Scott. You know, we got one more village over here. You can count on us for that. Right on, Scott. Well, thanks again for including me, and let's be in touch.
Yeah, I really appreciate this conversation, Evan. Thank you so much for joining me.
And that was Evan Marks of the Ecology Center. There is a moment in this conversation where Evan talks about there being ecology centers in each state, and I agree with them. This kind of model should be replicated elsewhere, and it's something I'm working on here, beyond the podcast, to combine the ideas you hear in this episode, the work of the Ecology Center and what Evan is doing, with those of the show, The Plan, from a while back, that discussed kind of where I'm heading long term. But I want to take that plan, the framework of the Ecology Center, combine that with the Hacker Spaces idea, first shared with us by Wayne Dorbend, and create a space where permaculture, ecological literacy, and skills, both high and low tech, can be taught to anyone who is interested in doing so. My eventual long-term goal is to create a private nonprofit university that can take young adults from high school through graduate school in a focused, mentored, small class environment. I'm kind of tired of dreaming big and want to dream even bigger, to do differently so that we can design and create differently. Will you join me? I ask because though I don't know where I originally heard this idea, there's a thought that in order to keep moving forward, we need to know what our next step is and then take it, and then figure out the next step and take it, and continually move onward. My next step over the next probably year is to start an educational nonprofit, a 501c3 nonprofit here in the U.S., to get the plan moving and an ecology center type of model going here in central Pennsylvania where I live. I know some of you have experience in these areas. If so, please let me know. I could use your help in navigating these new waters. If after listening to this episode you have questions for Evan as a follow-up to all of this, or would just like to get in touch with your own thoughts, please do so. Call me, 717-827-6266. Send me an email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. You can also join in the conversation on Facebook, facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast, or follow me on Twitter where I am @permaculturecst. And even though we connect via the podcast with technology, there's still a lot of room in this world and my life for low-tech communication, letters written on paper with pencil or pen or markers or crayons. However it is that you like to share your thoughts, you can reach me by mail at The Permaculture Podcast, P.O. Box 16, Dauphin, D-A-U-P-H-I-N, Pennsylvania, 17018. I look forward to hearing from you. Until our next time together, spend each day creating a better world by taking care of the earth, yourself, and each other.